One thing that we always, that you probably always hear, you know what I'm saying, the popular about yourself, you probably hear it all the time. You sound like Jeezy.
I mean, in my mind, like I said, when you play this interview back, subject matter, I'm speaking the same things that I was doing. You know what I'm saying? I used to be in my car hearing Jesus thinking he was rapping about me. You feel what I'm saying?
Right.
No bullshit, but I mean, I've heard it a lot of times, but in my mind, man, I mean, God gave me this raspy-ass, fucked-up-ass voice. And so I just used it to my, you know what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, like, I ain't going in that bitch like, oh, I'm finna go in this bitch and try to mimic Jesus. Now, I'm going in there just delivering the shit that, but it's two of everything. Like, that's what people, it's somebody that sound like everybody, but when you in the light and you're on a certain platform, motherfuckers just judge it. So that shit don't even bother me to keep it real.
It wouldn't bother me either, too. That's one of the greats. It's just, when I listen to it, I listen more and more, I feel like the raspy voice, yeah, but the main thing is that emotion that, yeah. Almost like that celebration, like I was talking about, that trap celebration. That's that nigga at the countertop telling you, nigga, this is what I made today.
Goddamn,
you know what I'm saying? On some shit. Like, but yeah, I like that though. But it is there. You know what I
mean? And that's what I said. Like, we talking about the same shit. He got stories in this same category. You know what I'm saying? And we both got these raspy voices. So, I mean, it is what it is.
But yeah. Is Jeezy the greatest trap rapper of all time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Shit show.
Like above Gucci?
Yeah, Gucci. I mean, it's two calibers of street niggas. You got the niggas that's over here hustling and making thousands, and you got niggas that's making millions. I mean, hustling-wise, you know what I'm saying? You know, it is what it is. Like, you got real good businessmen, and then you got real street dyke, just ignorant motherfuckers, you feel what I'm saying? I mean, I don't mean that in no disrespect in no type of way. Like, you know, I fuck with all of it, but like, I'm more of a polished street nigga than just the ratchet street nigga, you feel me? I'm more polished with it.
That's the most important part of it.
Like, I ain't trying to look like this or look like I'm just being that, you know what I mean? That's who I am.
That's the most important part about it. You know what I'm saying? That grind. You know what I'm saying? So, okay. Jeezy, greatest trap rap of all time. T.I. is the inventor of trap rap.
Yeah, I ain't even getting into that. I like Tip too. Like Tip, right, but I don't even look at Tip for the trap. Like,
okay.
Tip more just like a, like, inspirational street nigga. Like, you know, because he a little more wide variety of, like, Jeezy's a dope boy. He talking about like, he all, like, not necessarily saying that Tip not, it's just, you know what I'm saying, Tip a little more everywhere with the music. Jeezy just dedicated to the trap, so, you know.
Yeah, Jeezy kind of really, I'm talking about with the trap, connected with the strip club with that.
Yeah,
that 30,000.
That gangsta 808 sound.
Yeah, he kind of brought that
the
in.
The music sounded gangsta, like what he was talking about, you know what I'm saying? That's really what it is.
Yeah, it's something that, if that's what you're doing, that feeling, it kind of connects. Yeah. But see now, despite whether niggas say you sound like Jeezy or not, Jeezy, not only a friend of yours, a business partner of yours, you had to deal with Jeezy. Are you still signed to Jeezy?
Nah, I ain't signed to him no more.
Okay, you Jeezy signed.
Yeah.
What year was this when you signed with Jeezy?
About 2-3 years ago. But like, the way the deal was scheduled, like, we had a year to upstream it to a major, and if we didn't do it, he had an option another year, and then after that, it was over. Which, we had a lot of opportunity to do stuff, it's just a lot of stuff didn't come together all the way how it should, so.
But ultimately, it was a good deal.
I got to be able to do things that I wasn't going to be able to do without being in that circumstance.
You still fuck with him, though?
Oh, yeah, that's my nigga. Yeah.
So, more so, it's like a stepping stone for you.
Yes, sir. Yeah. All this shit, stepping stone.
So how does it go about, like, especially coming from a trap nigga to where Jeezy contact you, like, hey, how does it go about, how you even meet Jeezy? What was the first conversation like?
Boo Rossini was a nigga we fucked with in the streets, you know what I'm saying? And Boo Rossini was already Jeezy boy. So we did the plug record, and we we did the plug record, Jeezy liked it. And when I guess when he liked it, you know what I'm saying, he just wanted to jump on it, which really fucked me up because when we just was in the club one day and Boo was like, hey, man, when you get the instrumental to this song, blah, blah, blah. I sent it to him. We outside the club, Jeezy pulled up. He like, hey, BG, come out there. We jump in the back of the Ghost. He playing his verse. This shit just crazy, but it was
just crazy one night after the club. Because your boy connection.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. And so from that first meeting riding in the back of the Ghost, did y'all have another meeting?
Oh, yeah. That night, we went to the studio.
Yeah.
And me and Trey the Truth had a little incident. And I tell everybody, like, me, I'm just not no hater. I'm a real nigga all the way through and through. So we went to the studio. Tip walking there. I don't know what the situation was why Tip was there. You know, but we ended up listening to the song Jeezy did his verse. Trey walk in that motherfucker. And Jeezy was like, hey, you know, bro from the city. He looked at me like, oh, I seen him around. And then my mind, I'm like, nigga, seen me around. Like, nigga, I'm really having this shit. Like, we really putting on in the streets. Like, at that time, like, I was looking at Trey like an ambassador of the streets. Like, he embracing it.
When he said it.
Yeah, because in my mind, I'm thinking he embracing the street shit.
Right.
And at this time, nothing was bigger than me. You feel me? Like, at this time, I'm riding around. I got the Challenger. I got the Hummer. I got the LS460. I got the Camaro. We killing the clubs. Ain't no club you can't go to without it. And we really having money, and we solid through and through. But he saw that. This ain't nothing he ain't see. You know what I'm saying? This is something he knew. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I feel was fraud about the circumstance. So it wasn't that he was supposed to jump up and down and be like, oh, but I feel like me being who I am, I'm really out here doing what these niggas rapping about. When a nigga asks me, hey, what's up with Trey? You know, I'm gonna be like, oh, yeah, that nigga legend. That's just a real nigga in the city. That nigga putting on. That's just how I came at it. I wouldn't have came at it. Oh, yeah, that nigga from the South Side. Like, see, I wouldn't have did that. And if a nigga lie, act like they didn't know who the fuck I was. They just a fucking lie. You know what I'm saying? Because at this time, you couldn't miss me. Point blank, period.
You ever talked to Trey since then?
Yeah. We had a little situation, but at the end of the day, you know, like I said, man, where I come from, I'm the type of nigga, like, it's going to be this no matter if you see me one deep or I'm 50 deep. Like, so if I have a conversation with you and I think it's all good, it should be all good no matter what. I can't tell you that. Oh, it might not be good with such and such because it's ultimately going to reflect on you. So, in my mind, like, you know, from since then, you know, I feel like we done reached a good, great point where it's all great, you know what I'm saying? Really, I salute the nigga, though. And this nigga, I just think to myself, like, damn, nigga, I really put on out here. Like, you got to at least salute that part. You feel what I'm saying? So, that's all. But, nah, I really salute the nigga. I used to listen to his music and shit. I really had his shit on PlayStation and shit, so...
Alright, so when you said, hey, look, it's no looking back from that point, what we was on? White?
Yeah, well,
green.
No, it was green at that time.
Green, okay. Everybody start with green.
A couple of my homeboys that went off to school, because I was going to Westfield. Okay. And so a couple of niggas that went off to school, and niggas probably don't even know these stories. Like, the niggas I went to school with don't even know they was the ones that really kicked the shit off. They had went off to school, and when they was, one of my boys was out in Alabama. And I used to still sell 3 for 10s, even back in school and shit. I used to roll them, bitches, roll them. Nobody knew how to twist the blunts back then. So I knew how to twist blunts, so I used to twist the blunts, sell 3 for 10s and shit. Mm-hmm. So niggas knew I was selling weed. So when them niggas went to college, they started calling me, hey, G, you can give me 10 pounds, you can give me this, and that. And I remember the clear Air Force Ones that just came out. And my Mexican partner, I knew, I was like, man, these niggas coming to town, you can get 10 pounds. And they were like, the nigga was like, yeah. So them niggas drove all the way from Alabama. I think they gave me like an extra $200 on each one. So I think I had about $2,000, man. At that time, $2,000 was like $15,000 today. You know what I'm saying? Because $2,000, shit was cheap back then. And I remember them clear Air Force Ones came out. My nigga, I went and bought them clear Air Force Ones, my nigga. We were drinking that Hennessy. I bought me a bottle of Hennessy, my nigga. And I'll tell you, when I went back home, my nigga, there was nothing nobody could tell me. I knew what I was doing for the rest of my life. Or at least I knew what was going to change my life at that point. that's how it all start.
And that's crazy too, because when I look at Boston George, one thing about Boston George is that he might, you know what I'm saying, he might be top notch in the game, but he might not always be on the scene. But when it comes time to celebrate, nobody celebrate like Boston George.
Well, it's just a lot of years of making money. It's a lot of years of being successful. A lot of niggas don't understand that. So I watch niggas be, they'll go get the car that they see me driving and be thinking we the same. No, nigga, I own mine. You know what I'm saying? I got titles for everything that I ever buy. And I got that from Slim. Slim told me that a long time ago. But anything I got, I can sell. You feel what I'm saying? So it just be like, when it's time to party, nigga, it's like all the shit that I've been through, all the things that I done, all the niggas I done lost to either jail or hate or death. Man, when it's time to celebrate, nigga, it's time to go, man. It's time to go.
For sure. Hell yeah. So, okay, so coming up with your boys, right after the green, it was the whatever.
Well, see, what separated me, man, is off the dump. I saw what niggas was making right here. When them boys came from Alabama and they did that, and I was making $200, selling here making $25, didn't even make sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I started calling out to my family. I'm going to ask my mom, where our family from? You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to go see my family members, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I found out at that point my uncle was up in Ohio, and I called him. This nigga tell me, oh, nigga, if you get here, I got you. I'll never forget. I had a motherfucking Cadillac DTS, because I had sold my little Malibu that I had. I put the little money down on the Cadillac DTS. I'm broke as a motherfucker, though. I had that bitch on blaze, though. That bitch was clean. But I was working at Grocery Supply, man, and I ain't gonna lie, like, that was a low point. And my girl had just got what's the chick at the beginning of the year? So,
the stimulus? Not the stimulus.
Nah, the beginning. Everybody.
Tax shit?
Yeah, tax.
The tax shit.
Income tax. Yeah, everybody had just got their income tax on my girl at $3,000 because I had just had my daughter. And, man, my uncle told me, man, if you get down here, we good. Man, I took that car, that $3,000, and gave it to my Mexican partner. He gave me a whole block of grass. Mm. Me and my little partner, Bo, I told that nigga, I was like, hey, homie, shit, if you tired of being broke, I'm tired of being broke, man. I say, we, you know what I'm saying? I got a little play for us. He was down with me. I threw that shit in his trunk. It's so crazy because we wrapped that shit in mayonnaise and mustard and had all type of wrap on the nigga. The whole motherfucking house was, my apartment was stinking.
Mayonnaise and mustard?
Man, I had wrapped it with the saran, came with the mayonnaise and mustard, put the dry sheets on it.
That's to keep the smell up.
Just to keep the smell up.
Okay.
Throw that shit in his trunk. Boom, we right around the corner from here on Mills Road. Boom, we hit that AutoZone right there. He hit the curb when he turned in the AutoZone. I'm behind him. I'm like, damn, bro. What's going on? Man, I can still smell it. He nervous in the motherfucker. We walk in the AutoZone. I get a bunch of them air fresheners. I throw it in the car, all them little tree air fresheners. I'm like, nigga, you skinny? He's like, nah. I'm like, all right, bitch. It was a little bitch that I was fucking with in high school. I ain't even had no money to make it. I told him, hey, if you can get your mom a credit card to get us up there, I got you. I'm going to take a shot. And boom. She got her mama credit card, boom, we hit the road. Boom, we get up to Akron, Ohio, nigga. Mind you, I'm 18 years old.
That's crazy.
I don't know nothing about Akron, Ohio. I don't never been there, nothing. I'm talking, we driving all the way there. Like, we ain't even got nothing illegal because we too dumb to know what we had going on. We get up there, man, my uncle staying in the projects. So I'm sitting there like, what the fuck? We done got down at any high. He's looking at me, nephew, I see you right now with a ponytail to the side, nigga. I'm like, nigga, what? Nigga, we out this bitch. I'm thinking, you know, I remember the uncle from when I was a young nigga.
Right.
With the suede shirts driving back to back in them Lincolns. I don't know this one. So, man, he was fucking with a lady. She was dancing, but she was a real cool motherfucker. She called a nigga, we burn off. Boom, we come back. I stayed in the car the whole time. He gave me some money. Coming up, throw the money on the floor. Told you, nigga, I'll do this, nigga. I count it's like 1800. And down like that time, the grass was like 800 for the Reggie and shit. But down here was 275. So, nigga, you gotta think. Hey, that was a sick down there, $500-$600 margin. So, boom. Mom gave me the money. I'm like, where the Reggie? He had took like 4 pounds. So, the nigga was like, nigga, I told you, nigga. He all fucked up, but luckily the nigga came back. The nigga played for the Eagles, matter of fact. Nigga was like, hey, youngster, I'm gonna be honest with you, man. Y'all got a little fucked up. He left this up in the car, man. He traded a little bit of the shit for some whatever the cake. Luckily, my uncle had already introduced me to a nigga that cut it out. So I went live to the nigga, told the nigga, man, I got like 3 more. And I just 3 more the nigga all the way out. Come to find out, he knew LeBron's. It's like LeBron was raised by some people that wasn't even his real family. You know what I'm saying? But I guess I don't know the real story, but this was like his stepbro. So when I left Akron with about, I had the money for the carpet. I had about 6,000 profit and some 28 stack for the Hummer, because he had an extended Hummer down there. A nigga sold me the wheels. So I had the wheels, boom, I get all the way back down here with the wheels, everything. But I got 6,000 cash, nigga, that I never had before in my motherfucking life.
Right, that thing, that's what turned
it on. And I told, it's so many, like Cheddar Connect, you know, my nigga Lee, but like, it's so many niggas. These stories, every nigga from this side, you know, cause I was letting them niggas, I was bringing them niggas with me. Like, I bought that fucking mean coat. All this shit.
You was bringing niggas with you on the street.
Way up there. You know what I'm saying? Niggas that had never seen past Lincoln Green, Briar Creek. You know what I'm saying? Shit like that. So, you know what I'm saying? When I start getting that out of town money, that's what the difference between me and any of the rest of these niggas that are doing this shit. Because they was cool with getting that local money. That was the difference between my money and nigga.
That's what's up, man. That's what's up. Coming from hustle town.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. All right. Now, people, what you saying?
Camera and your microphone come on, even if your screen closed. and it notifies like an AMPA alert every black person in the vicinity. So let's say it's like 100 black people in the area for whatever reason. They all will get this notification. Yeah. If we free, let's say, you know,
maybe it's like a Waze when they notify our Colorado.
Whenever you feel pressure, you want to get that budget in there and people come see.
Yeah, and then basically what'll happen is, let's say out of that 100, 30 of those people are actually available. 20 of them actually come out. If they all coming out and filming, you're less likely to get mishandled knowing I got 20 cameras on me.
Right.
And me personally, I add to that, if you see somebody getting mishandled, you got to get involved.
Right.
You got to get involved. You can't just stand there and record because that's somebody's life. That's somebody's mom. I guarantee you, if that's you on the ground smiling your neck, you're going to want somebody to push this dude up.
But then you look at that. I'm just saying on the other side. Yeah, because what happened
that's
with George Floyd, if everybody said, if I was there, I would have jumped on that cop. They would have whooped your ass, shot you, or whatever. How you can you prevent that? How you going to tell somebody to do that?
Well, as far as that part concerned, that's up to the individual. I'm telling you, when I get to that space, I'm telling you how I operate as a person, how I would deal during this situation. Now, how that person decides to stand there and continue to record, or whatever the case, or try to call somebody else, or whatever the point is, you got people that's there, and
so
can't nobody manipulate the story to say, oh, he tried to go for my gun, or
right.
This and that, you got 20 people seeing the whole process go down.
Right.
And make sure you stay a safe distance where you're not
interfering. That's a good way of working together, you know, to keep the police.
And it's basically like what the Black Panthers used to do, except it's adding a technology to it to where anybody could be a black
person.
Stop the violence type songs. If you just put a little nugget here and there, everybody's into you eventually.
You gotta move.
Yeah, if some say, hey, you know, I spend money with black business.
Yeah.
People who follow you are going to do what you're doing.
We definitely.
So I was walking and say, hey, I didn't buy no chain. I went and bought property in the hood.
We
people that follow me, I'm going to do that.
We do all that. We older now, so, you know, the older dudes who've been knowing us, they follow us, and they always come to us and say, man, we got inspired. We seen what y'all was doing. It's just about connecting with the youngster, you know, the kids now.
The key to the community.
See that a lot.
The key to the community is the average person is a consumer. They don't think big cerebral thoughts about how to operate through life. Most of the time, you can get almost anybody, black, white, whatever color, do it if you make it cool.
Right.
So that's the key, is doing certain things that need to be done, the cool thing to do at the same time, which it really is.
Right.
But so often, it's being painted in a certain way. Like now, reading books and stuff is becoming more and more cool. But you think about Philly. Shorty can't eat no books. That's the mentality a lot of people have had in the hood about reading.
Right.
And it takes people that got influence to say, you know what I'm saying? What you do when you ain't nothing to do? Well, you know, when I'm at the house, I read books. Like, damn, Sam read books? What books you read, Sam?
I don't read enough books. I do read books, but not enough. I read shit that be, like, interesting to me, you know, like, as far as, like, because I'm an attention fool. Like, it's hard to keep my, I don't even watch TV shows, you know what I'm saying, unless it's, like, some real good shit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I definitely see my brother, Young Sam, reading all the time, and he inspires me.
Stay in life. Like, right now, with everything that's going on, I've been reading about the Mets book, and he was talking about how he went to Mecca. And he was getting greeted by white people, all kinds of different races, but they didn't look at him as being black. Like, they all looked at everybody as equal. And he said once he witnessed that over there and came back to America, he realized there was really something wrong in the way that they look down at Americans. Like, they feel disgusted because they don't believe that people should treat people like that. But that's pretty much like the Islamic way of their religion. That's how they is, period, with us. So that's why a lot of people be saying, like, well, let's just say, like Elijah Muhammad said, that's the original religion that we're supposed to follow, because the guidelines and the way that they handle themselves as far as, like, with the people. So, I think that's really what's missing right now in the world. Like, that be the transition to this. And that's kind of, like, a lot of the reason why I feel like, as far as, like, saying I'm a Christian. Like, I say I'm not a Christian. I really don't even try to claim a religion, because I feel like it'd be a separation on everything.
Right.
That's what we got. Got everybody
separated.
It was
part of the division.
Most of the different divisions under Christianity, like being a Catholic or a Baptist, were made by human beings, by kings who wanted to manipulate the Bible to work how they wanted it to work. So it was like, well, in this area, we're not going to do divorce, we're not going to do confessions, and we're not going to do this. And what do we call this? Well, this new version is called baptism.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of how these divisions got. Basically, people want to take out the parts they don't like.
Right. And create their own thing.
Yeah, but when the disciples was following Jesus, he didn't call them Christians, he didn't call them Catholics, he didn't call them none of that. They was fishers of men. So, to me, when you put certain types of labels on them, people ask me about it, I just say, I have a faith. And I tell them I believe in Jesus and I do certain whatever, but I don't put a title on them.
Yeah. I'm the same way.
Exactly. Because I'll be using pretty much a lot from everything. I read the Bible and I turn around and read Elijah Muhammad book. And at the same time, it's like when they do Ramadan, I participate in Ramadan, but at the same time, I'm still reading my Bible.
Yes,
so it's like,
natural.
It works for me. I feel like everybody's faith or whatever in God, I feel like they got their own relationship, so it's going to work for them. And I feel like that's another thing with black people. Like, they got to get their mind right as far as, like, on the spiritual side. But at the same time, we can say it could be race wars and all this, but it's real spiritual at the same time, because you got certain black people. Let's just say we got black people that think that black people just out here being ignorant because they want to be ignorant and they want to be lazy or whatever. Like, at the same time, it's a mental thing.
They
so they really
That's
stuck awesome. In a rat race to where they can't get out of it.
The rat race, they're frustrated.
The rat race that has been passed down.
Right.
It's been passed down.
It's
mentally.
Like George Floyd's, what shakes them up to where they're like, okay, you shook them up and they out of it. So now, like y'all say, what's the plan? Because we got them shook up out of it. They want to see what black people going to do better. But after a while, party's gonna start back. The second stimulus check gonna come around and it's gonna be like, well, what's up now?
Yeah.
Like, everybody gonna be back on their own thing. So that's why these plans right now, like, all the people that start these marches and everything got all the people there. So not only get all the people there, are we passing out some papers to recruit them to come to the next meeting to where we could actually start talking about what we're gonna do?
Right. It got to be some more meetings.
Right.
We might not get this done till meeting number 70, but we can't get off of this protest.
I think it starts like locally. I don't think it's a global thing.
That's what it do.
I think it starts with somebody doing it in their community. Know what I'm saying? One place, and then somebody coming in with that, and then, like I say,
take that structure.
Got the lawyer, get a lawyer in, and them involved where the shit is legit and ain't no dumb shit.
Yes.
Get the doctors and different successful people involved to show that it's official, and and it ain't no like scam type shit or nothing like it. It's real.
Right.
And then you have people like me who can help promote it as a rapper. You know what I'm saying? A different rapper.
And
that's how it should be.
You want to talk to us?
Yeah, I'm down with that. I'm
the first thing that I think that would have to be addressed when you sit people down like that is, number one, they gotta agree to disagree, which is also part of the plan. And what that means is, whether you a Muslim, or a Catholic, or you an atheist, you gay, you straight, whatever you are, the first thing people see, the thing that might get you killed or keep you alive, is you being black. So let's focus on that part first. If I'm a Christian and you gay, we can't get into an argument on whether or not your lifestyle is right, because if you dead, I can't bring you to Christ.
Right.
If I'm dead, you can't bring me to see that I should be able to live my life how I want to, whichever way is right. Let's just, put all that out the window and focus. And the other part is, let's get past the verbal Uno we like to play. Oftentimes, you get people in this room and, well, I've been marching for 10 years. Well, I was right there with Marcus Garvey. Well, I didn't.
None of that matters.
Right. If you're not going to pull that out right now and do something with it,
exactly.
We not, because if you had a plan, we would have heard about that.
Right.
So the fact that you ain't come with nothing and say, hey, black people, let's try this, means you should be open to hear what my plan is. Don't be ready to shoot them down. Don't be waiting for your turn to talk.
Right.
You wouldn't listen.
Right.
That'd be the problem. That'd be a point of the problem. And now, even when somebody bring a plan, somebody else gonna have another plan. You know what I'm saying? So it's gonna be.
I don't even mind hearing another plan. It's just because maybe you got something in your plan that, hey, if we put this piece from here, this piece from mine, we gotta be open. It can't just be, well, we gotta do mine. Because even with what I have, I don't necessarily say it's the best, because I ain't heard nobody else's.
Yeah.
My thing is, this is what I got.
You took a step.
And if you got something on my number one and say, well, number one is cool, maybe we should add this to it.
Right.
You know what? You're right. Bam. That's it. Not some, but since it ain't my idea,
right,
you got to put them ego on the side.
Yeah. I think it's a group effort.
With yourself also, I think that, and let's just say, like, as far as boss, like how y'all started building up houses, having damn near a whole block. Now let's just think about it. We got other black people. Let's just say the small drug dealers or whatever, they say they're going to put themselves together. They're going to get a hood store. Like, if each one person just take it upon themselves to do something positive as far as, like, the black race to put us ahead, and I think it's really more on an each one, teach one type of thing, because it's not going to happen all, like, right the next 2 years or whatever. I think over the course of time, as far as, like, let's just think about how let's just say how your dad raised you or my dad raised me or whatever. We feel like, okay, I can do better with my kid. And for us to have a whole thought to say, okay, now I'm finna raise my kid a whole different way better. Yeah. And then you think about your kid coming down the line, he finna raise his better. So at the end of the day, it's gonna get better, but we all gotta be taking upon ourselves to do something first.
Taking the steps now.
Yeah.
And something else to add to that, what you're saying is, if it was that type of group, then that's a big issue too. Like, a lot of dudes even got dry money. Like, they got money just at the house, but they don't really know what else to do running but buy a chain.
Mm-hmm.
So if you tell them, hey man, if you want to open up, it needs somebody to be in that group also, doctor, lawyer, financial, business person who can give them the game of, hey man, you got a dry 20, okay, well, we can do this with this and you can be making this.
Because, right,
you know what I'm saying?
That's what it's going to take. Plan a structure, build, and then let that show people. We show and tell people. Y'all know that's why our social media is so popular right now. So I got an idea. So we start with a model.
We got so much money in the city amongst the rappers. By a town.
By who?
A town.
What you mean a town?
By there's whole towns.
Like kind of like the whole. Yeah,
y'all see them all the time. I see them. It's all. It's 10 million
times. For sale for 1.7
million times. Yeah.
A whole town.
A whole town for 1.7.
Yeah. So Slug get his own street. Scarface get his own street. Bud get his own street. Everybody who put in a big number get their own street.
Who the fuck live at?
We do.
Shit.
But see, that's where you need that team you was talking about to come in and make everything right. You gotta make the economy. You know, you
ain't trying to move in the middle of nowhere.
Ain't nobody gonna do that.
Nobody ain't moving in the middle of nowhere. We can't to start our own city. I ain't gonna say we can't, because you can. And it can happen, but I'm just saying, from my standpoint, my idea is like, I need access to cool shit. And it's gonna be hard to get.
You're not gonna have my life since I got too many changes on
I don't wanna leak on the cool. I wanna just make motherfuckers, you know, do something.
And that's all. I feel like we can just buy shit around here at the same time. Motherfuckers move when they don't wanna be around certain shit. So at the end of the day, but
there's so much like Homestead is pretty much vacant through the whole state.
You're saying there's places we can buy.
We
just gotta support each other.
Exactly. Right?
And we can stay down here where we at. We gotta support each other. Like if Homestead, they got clothing stores over there. They got car lots over there. That's what we need to be buying our car.
Right.
Because I heard them say, hey, so one day we're gonna shut down and not buy nothing from white businesses. That ain't gonna do shit.
I'm glad you brought that up.
30 days ain't gonna do shit. We need to do 6 months to a year to where we support our people. Because once you get in the habit of that, you're going to constantly do that. And then if you're doing that for 6 months, I'm not saying we got everything black that we can buy. Of course you got to buy a pair of Nikes. But you know what I'm saying? You got certain shit you have to buy for them. But for the most part, these big companies, Louboutin, that ain't speaking up for us, they got the money and the power. Fuck them. We're not buying them right now. Fendi, we're not buying them. We can go.
Fuck
you know what I mean? Stay too funky fresh every day. You don't have to keep buying new shit. You can rock your old. Let's just put a small dent in that shit and start buying with us. You know what I'm saying?
Cool thing about this, fool. This is global. This shit is not local. This is how many motherfuckers from Versace donated anything?
You don't even speak it up for
Louis Vuitton said anything. How many motherfuckers who else is
with? I seen Jeffrey.
Christian Dior.
A lot of them glad they not. That's going to make us the same way how we end up having to build this whole industry in Houston because none of the other areas want to fuck with us. Now that's going to make motherfuckers like, hey, we got to get right because look at what's happening. I got a whole closet full of Gucci. What Gucci said? Nothing.
A lot of record labels, Def Jam said, we don't support racism. You're going to say that. I don't see you do so. Where's that money? You could also do other shit, though, because y'all in a position to sit with the people and shit like that.
What if
you can donate $100,000, but you can also sit with Trump behind closed doors and do something to help him win. So I want to see you doing something like that. We know when some shit affect you. Fuck a post or a tweet, show me your actions, you know what I'm saying? Because you make money off of us anyway. So, even with the record industry game, let's just talk about them. Like, it's for a lot of the artists. Let's just say black artists is the one that's really running the game when it comes to music industry. But the structure of the contract is always structured to keep the artists in debt some type of way. So they to for us to present to our own ones and have a say in my label when really we can compose our own contracts and create our own game when it comes to this independent game to us. Nigga, I'm not gonna be crumbling my own boy telling him, nigga, you super duper and then tell overcharging the prices of the videos and shit like that, doing no shit. And then at the end of the day, now niggas is in debt and they got beef. And that's how a lot of beefs are starting because they be pretty much taking a game that they set up for us based on our talent and we giving it to our homeboys. And then niggas, you got niggas having beef saying this nigga messed up or this nigga put my album out or whatever. He's saying I own this one, but really, I ain't marked it up. So I think like that's another thing we got to take power of. Like a lot of niggas is going independent, stay independent. And when you sign your homeboy, let's not use that same old paperwork how they been doing.
They can fabricate
our own business. He don't do fabricate.
I hate to punch in on that, but I I'll say, like, it makes sense, but we let white people do it. And, like, I think that's the biggest
thing. We don't do that too. People. Why we don't run up on Jimmy Iovine like we run up on the nigga from
the We don't fight on my own chicken for the same idea. You're right.
Structure going all businesses though. We all businesses, not only the record industry. It's the same way. Yeah. And we do each other the same way.
Exactly. So it's tied up with our own rules.
Yeah.
Anything we taking charge of. Let's just say even the NBA, like how they telling him to just shut up and dribble or whatever. They was telling LeBron, I'm like, why niggas ain't saying, hey, you know what? We gonna step down from there. Let's get with Ice Cube. Let's see how we can. He got the 3-on-3. How can we go and get our own? He better.
It all going down. That's with everything. All of that stuff. It's like my answer to all that shit is build our own. If we mess around, and made our own NFL or version of NFL. Yes. Two things gonna happen. Number one, all your star players gone. Number two, they gonna all end up coming to our shit because everything they do and the whole culture of this globe is perpetuated by black people.
Shit, okay, we're gonna set this up for them to work. They're gonna play basketball like this, they're gonna drop music like this. So they create this whole thing looking out while we just get a cage.
That's right. That's why this stance right now today is so important.
Yeah,
like that's why we can't stop. If we stop, they're gonna keep us in that systematically cage.
Right.
Like now it's different than before. You can have some money and still be a slave, you not know it. Like, they can loot us, like, I don't care. They can loot us by price gauges. That's looting the shit out of us.
They do it every time something don't happen. They do it. Nothing happens to the people that do it.
Well, nothing done to them. You know what I'm saying?
So, Black Saturday Movement is the idea I have. Basically, the way it would work is every Saturday after the July 7th thing where people supposed to not spend no money, every Saturday you spend money with a black business. Every Saturday. And you post where you went and you use the hashtag Black Saturday Movement 2020. That's going to line up all the way into the day after Black Friday, which is a Saturday. On that day, you spend money with nothing but black people that whole day. The day after Black Friday. And you use that hashtag. That's gonna make it viral, that's gonna make everybody see it. That's the first year.
That's the start.
The second year is this. We go to all the black businesses that people complain about for whatever reason. We say, hey, this black business normally makes $1,000 on Saturdays. When they participated with us last year, they made $7,000 on one Saturday. We wanna bring you in, but the only way we can do that is if you fix your toilet or work on your customer service, whatever that thing is. Basically, we're going to make it profitable for you to turn your business into a good business.
Because, see, that's a lot of problem with black business because they don't really stand on the correct principles when it comes to running the business. They be thinking that they can come late. They think they can talk to people.
But the thing people don't understand is that here's the thing about a lot of people don't get. You see them pictures all the time, the lynches and stuff like that, right? A lot of times what people don't know is the people that's in that picture, they own businesses that make more money than their white counterparts in that same city or town. Let's say, for example, you the black barber. All the black people got to go to you because you the only one.
Right.
As opposed to it's five white barbers, all that shit broke up. So then all of a sudden they jealous, you get hung. So if I'm your son, I just watch you get hung. How fast I'm going to be to open a business? And it's the same shit with learning to read.
Right.
It's the same shit with standing up for yourself. Yeah. That's why, see, a lot of people think, man, black people can't work together. That is the reason why.
Yeah.
The reality of this is we're not going to fix this shit even in our lifetime. The key is to have a plan, do your part, and when you get to where you can't do that no more, your kids know it's time for me to step up now. That's how you do it. So that's the second year. The third year, we do this. Okay, you my white partner, you my Asian partner. You really down with us? On this one day, you spending money with nothing but black people. We spend money with white people 365, 25 days. You can take this one and just spend with us.
Yeah.
Then you take that, a lot of that extra money people normally wouldn't have, and that's when you start voting. A lot of people say vote. I ain't never voted like Pimp C. Reason being, I ain't never seen it work for nobody. But my thing is, we not Republicans no more. We're not Democrats, we're not liberals, we are the black party. We move as a unit. We decide, hey, we want these such and such rules, these laws added. If you can do this, Biden, if you can do this, Trump, we don't even care who it is. Yeah. If you can do this, you get our vote and you get our bread.
That's my
if you can't do that,
to be in right now.
If
right
you can't do it, because what's going to happen is, let's say, for example, if somebody important sat down with Trump right now and he said, what do y'all want to make our protests go away?
Nobody knows.
See what I'm saying?
Well, I'm sure there's some people who work behind the scenes and just not famous. You know,
they
got plans too.
Yeah, they got
plans.
But it's like,
it
should be, everybody should know.
Usually, what ends up happening is they allow the person who's been doing the oppression to come up with the plan to kill the oppression. Well, we want justice. Okay, y'all want justice, let us give you this. No, we give you the plan and you do this. This is what we want. We don't want your version of justice because your version never worked out for us. Keep in mind, when they started doing all that shit in California with the battle rounds and when all the drugs were popping off, that was the response of black people saying, we tired of all these drug dealers. That was us allowing them to come up with the plan to fix it. A lot of times you deal with the government, they like prescription medicine. They fix one thing and fuck something else up. So we got to come up with the plan. So we take that money, we create our own party. We move as a unit. We might say, hey, we got 100 laws we want in office for whatever reason. Out of that 100, everybody vote for the top 5 you think is the best. Out of that, we find our top 5, we go to whoever's going in office, and we say, hey, this is what we want. Y'all can't give us that drink, get our money or our vote. I guarantee you, if we start moving like that, we start getting, because that's basically what's happening. That's the real reason why we get shot on TV. It ain't because we black. It's because we don't have no power in them offices. Right. If the same thing would have happened to a Jewish person, the same time you saw that march, somebody would have been in the office talking to somebody who can actually make some shit happen.
Exactly.
The problem with us, we see the march part, but we don't have that office part.
Yeah.
That's how you get the office part with the check. The reality of it is, all these politicians for sale. Wealthy people don't vote, they buy who they want.
Mm-hmm.
I need the music industry to run this way, so me, Jimmy Iovine, I'm going to give you all these campaign dollars.
Man, it's a brother.
And I'm going to put you in this magazine, and I'm going to put you right there, but I need this to go this way for the music industry. That's how we need to start moving. Exactly.
Book called Power Numbers.
That's what I was saying about
a long time since.
His plan to the T.
Man. He got a plan.
So the Black Saturday thing is how we implement the first part of his plan.
And this is how this got to be done. Because we got to get in the markets and we got to get in the money structure to make anything happen.
Right.
And even with the black banks, everybody's saying, let's go put money in the black bank. I don't necessarily agree with that. What I agree with is we go talk to the people who run the bank. And we find out how they operate. And we say, hey, we want to bring you all this business, but two things you can't do. You cannot lend to these developers that gentrified our neighborhood. Because see, what's happening is, let's say in that Chase and Fifth Ward right on Lyman Street. All the people in that area putting their money in that bank. I'm a developer. I'm part of the gentrifying process. I go get a piece of property. Y'all got property. 10% down on some company out of this paper. Y'all give me the money to develop. Basically, I'm taking Fifth Ward's money to take Fifth Ward from them.
Right.
Only thing worse than getting robbed with your own gun. That's basically what's happening. So when you go to Liberty or whoever, we got to be like, one, you can't be one of the people that's going into the people that's taking our hoods from us. And two, you got to be positive about helping us develop our own businesses. So if I'm Sam and I want to start this photography store, and I got a concrete plan, this and that, you're going to make sure I get that money. If I'm missing something, you're going to tell me what I need to get it done.
Yeah.
Because that's what they doing.
That's what we missing.
That's what they doing. Don't just say, oh, he ain't got no shirt and tie on, he blah, blah, blah. Like, hey, young dude, you know, I see what you're trying to do. You got this part right. You need this. Come back in 3 months, and we're going to get it going.
That's
what
a lot of
people
got a lack of education.
It can't just be to go to the black bank. If they're moving like the counterparts, then what's the point of giving them all our money? If they don't give it to the people that's going to take Fifth Ward, Trinity Guard, Homestead, whatever, what's the point of giving them money?
Yeah.
Yeah, black banks.
That's just doing
I'm applying to the black banks for a $50 loan, and they said, don't have this, and this. And, like, I got most of the shit that we need. Nigga, help me out. You see what I'm doing. Right. You know what I'm saying? But it was like, Now you ain't got this. But, you know, and that shoot you down, and now you got to go to the other banks where they'll kind of let you slide a little bit, but they're a little bigger, you know what I'm saying?
But the problem with the people that are abused, oftentimes they start to operate like the people that abuse them. So, like, even in music, I signed this bullshit contract. Man, I'm starting my own label. What I'm going to do? Give you a bullshit contract. I got fucked over by the white banks. I'm a black bank owner. What I'm going to do? Give you the same paperwork the white folks gave me. See what I'm saying?
It's a business model.
Yeah, well, he didn't come in with a shirt and tie. Blah, blah. Bro, we was out there in that field together. You forgot?
Everybody don't wear it is this top
club.
That's the thing. Like,
most of the people making the most money off of the businesses don't dress like this. I mean, when the last time you seen the dude that on Facebook with a tie and a suit on? They dress out of Walmart.
Facebook don't dress like
that. Look at Slim, like Slim even said, he had to be a boss and just do whatever.
Couple years ago, I don't know if you remember this, I was in a sneaker store. Mm-hmm. And I was there too long. Mm-hmm. Against my own rule. Slipping, playing around, talking to bitches, laughing, joking. Next thing you know, a nigga had a gun in my face. Mm-hmm. And I was offended because I said, damn, boy, this is me, nigga. A gun in my face, nigga. I'm you, nigga. I was like, man, this is a bad place for me to be in. You got this gun in my face. You trying to take my chain. And I just was like, man, this is not good. And I was mad at myself in that instant, in all those seconds of what was going on in my mind. I was upset at myself because I know better. Fuck whatever, I was in the car and all that, they're not gonna help me. Fuck who I am and the respect that I get, none of that's gonna help me right now. Damn, what the fuck was I thinking? Lucky for me, I ain't panicking, this nigga ain't know what he's doing, cause I reversed that situation, took the gun and shot him with his own gun. God bless his soul. I heard he died for some unrelated shit. I was never really mad at him though, cause I understand. Yo, my nigga, we hungry. My nigga, you come. You, boy, you fool, nigga. You out here in the back of the streets, nigga. You fucking. So I never was really mad at the little nigga for trying me like that. I was more mad at myself if I allowed myself to be in that situation. When I knew better, when I was that type of nigga, it's just that he didn't know what he was doing, and he let his overzealousness put himself in a position to win. Next thing you know, we wrestling for the gun, and I'm biting him, and I'm telling him, boy, I'm a touch you, boy. I'm telling you, I spoke word, cause I was mad. Put a gun in my face, nigga, like you bugging my nigga. Bugging my nigga, you standing too close to me, my nigga. Come on, my nigga, you bugging, you got the gun on my forehead. Can't do that. So I speak about this shit now, there's like statute of limitations on that shit, right? I'm cool. Yeah, but like
that. Well, that's crazy to look at that example though. Even you who's
right,
you know.
Right. Who's people saying I'm respected and all that, but it don't mean that, is what I'm saying. Don't mean nothing if you put yourself in a wrong type of jam. I allow that to happen. If I would have got the bad end of that, if I would have got the short end of this, that stick, it would have been all my fault. And all my homies who know I know better always say to me, you know you fucked up. What's wrong with you, my nigga? You know way better. You getting caught up in this rap shit. You know way better than that. You know we done did way too much shit. We done been involved in way too much shit for you to be standing in some shit. You ain't even from there. That's not even turf. You on a whole other side of town.
still adjusting to fame, y'all. Up in Pigeons, we adjusting to fame. We still adjusting to fame. No, no, no. Hold on. Hold on, how you gonna... Damn. Oh, my knees work today. Yeah. My knees working today.
And is sponsored by 97 Entertainment presents the movie Raina.
All right, y'all. It's showtime. Let's go.
So we're going to play this one smooth. Not going in there to rock any boats or make any waves, Neek.
It's going to be straight, Raina. Definitely should crack for more than 150K. He got that shit, man.
150,000? Why you being so nice to me?
I'm sure a man like you understands that a deal, even a good one, doesn't make itself happen.
Heard Wu-Tang is, you know what I mean? Because DJ Premier always talks about the first time he heard Wu-Tang, he was with Onyx in the club when we was wilding. But the first time Onyx heard Wu-Tang, we was in the crib in Jersey, like 2 in the morning, you know what I'm saying? Stretching Bobito playing it. So the whole crew, we got the whole Onyx crew in the crib, you know what I'm saying? We got the sick crib, crazy. So we wilding. Shit, Protect Your Neck came on. It was crazy. Niggas was like, oh, shit. Wow, you know what I'm saying? We got the Hennessy, you know, the blunts is rocking, and everybody in the crib was just like, yo, I like this dude, I like that dude. I was probably like, I like Method Man, and Stick probably was like, I like Old Dirty Bastard. One nigga probably said, I like Raekwon, whatever, you know what I mean? We was just gravitating to who we thought was still on that track. So, but here's the shit, though. There was an A&R for Death Jam. She was a female, you know what I'm saying? And she was with us that night. She was in the crib. She was like down with Onyx. You know what I'm saying? Like part of the structure. So she was with us in the crib that night when Protect Your Neck came on. Now an A&R job is they could sign artists to the label. She had signing power. She was that. You know what I'm saying? She was that Jadeb Jam. She had signing power. She was high up. You know what I mean? And she was with us the first day, the first time we heard Wu-Tang. So she was like, I don't like this. You know what I mean? I'm not really feeling it. I'm like, what? We like, whoa, you ain't feeling this shit? That's crazy. Make a long story short, 2 or 3 weeks later, Method Man gets signed to Def Jam. We like, oh, word? And she signed them to Def Jam. She was the one who signed them. So we like, oh, I thought you ain't like it. You know what I'm saying? So basically, you know what I'm saying? She, the first time she heard Wu-Tang, she was with us. And the energy we was putting into that, you know what I'm saying? She did her thing. And Method Man got signed at Def Jam, one of the realest niggas in the game. You know what I mean? We got a song called, we did a joint called Evil Streets Remix. A lot of niggas probably never even heard that. Shout out to my nigga P.I. He was on a joint. Method Man came to the studio, stayed there the whole night. You know what I mean? Like, he ain't even, after he did his verse, he stayed there the whole night till the record was mixed. Well, real nigga. Shout out to Rich Keller. He's mixing all our records back then. But that Evil Street remix is crazy, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, Method Man got signed to Def Jam off the energy that we brought to the A&R, you know what I mean? Or somebody else might have scooped him up. So she got in early. Word up. And we got a lot of stories with the Wu-Tang Clan, man. Onyx and Wu, we've been through a lot, you know what I mean? You know, we got a record called The Worst. You know what I mean? That was for the Ride soundtrack, a movie that me and Sticky was starring in. And we got a nice bag for that joint. But The Worst, you know, The Worst is crazy, produced by my man Latif. And we was on tour with the Wu. We did the Survival of the Illest tour. That's just a whole nother story. The Survival of the Illest tour was crazy. Onyx, DMX, Ja Rule, Wu-Tang, the whole EPMD crew, Redman, all them niggas, everybody on one bus. Foxy Brown, Sweet T, Pretty Boy, everybody was on one fucking bus, bro. This shit was crazy. That Survival of the Illest, it was crazy. But yeah, man. Man got signed to Wu-Tang off that energy that we brought in the A&R scene at, man. That shit was crazy. Shout to Meth, you already know.
This MREC TV content is sponsored by 97 Entertainment presents the movie Raina.
Alright, y'all. Showtime. Let's go.
So we're gonna play this one smooth. Not going in there to rock any boats or make any waves, Neek. It's gonna be straight, Raina. Definitely should crack for more than 150K. He got that shit, man.
150,000? Why you being so nice to me?
I'm sure a man like you understands that a deal, even a good one, doesn't make itself happy.
Content is sponsored by Bobby Boucher, RP again, featuring B Magic 302. Check out the dope visuals and a banging record by Bobby Boucher. Click the link below. It's in the comments and the video description.
Yo, I'll never say never again. Forever we ride to the end. If cheddar defining a friend is better.
Placing an ad on MREC TV, contact MREC TV promo, MRECKTV promo@gmail.com. Peace.
Oh yeah, subscribe to MREC TV, youtube.com/MREC TV. I'm gone.
I'm saying I gotta lay down with you. Besides, that's before the love and everything. I gotta wanna have sex with you for years to come. I can't be fucking you and I'm not sexually attracted to you. I take that over chemistry. I take that over bread. I take that over everything. Because if we got all that, now I'm a gym dude, my family, athletes, business people, all around. So I'm carrying on tradition. I'm not gonna just fuck with nobody that's sloppy, don't care about their looks and just eat whatever. No, like I'm good on that. Then I don't even want no joint. You keep them. You know what I mean? If that's the case, and I'm crazy for that, You know what I mean? I can see if I wasn't a nice looking motherfucker saying it, but if I'm a nice looking motherfucker saying it, you gotta respect it in the scripture. You can't go against it. You know what I'm saying? No, I mean, you got your sexual preference though. That ain't even got nothing to do with a relationship. You wanna hit something nice though. You know what I mean? When you come home, like, if you got money and you paying the bills and all that, you want a nice piece of, it's like food. You can have hair, or you can have Roof Chris, or you can have Iron Chef. Like, it's just like your food, like what you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody's different. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm coming with looks, I want some looks. Like, I ain't coming with no looks and asking for a lot. Like,
She got a bad character.
A lot of women, all women got bad character.
No, it's not. He's like, don't try to give me the right answer. How are she looking?
You get the number one with the good character that look good. You get the one with the good character that look good. I'm just saying,
it's
like...
It's not easy to have all of them on the same person. It's not easy. Why?
You
gotta spend all your life like,
no! There's a lot of women that got it all going on. They got looks.
It's not easy to find them. If you find them too, if you find them too, maybe they got somebody for a while, so it's not easy to leave because they come to you. You know what I'm saying?
So what's your standards? So would you marry Precious? What makes what you say work?
Always work like the people, the good guy, good character, that's the good person.
That's everybody looking for, but you still need some physical attraction though too. You know what I'm saying? You still need some physical attraction though too.
You still need physical attraction, but all the women, they're beautiful. Make sure she clean, you spend money on her. The ugly girl right now, somebody see them, pick them from the street, they spend money on her. The next 2 weeks she will be beautiful. Trust me. For real.
You don't got no standards. You don't care.
No. You don't know me. But the thing I told you, it makes sense. I spend money on her. But she got everything.
Mixed money. What about the qualities? Well, I'm a gym person. What if she don't work out? I like the gym fitness. It's got to have all the qualities lined up. You know what I mean? It's what you like and what your life about, what you do. You know what I'm saying? You gotta go to the gym anyway. You no matter what, that's over the money. Anything. Right, you gotta be skinny to be old. You can't be fat, sloppy, and live to 90. They don't live that long.
So right now,
there's no fat, sloppy, old people. There's
right
no
now,
way you can duck that.
Right now,
there's no fat, sloppy, old people. You gotta go to the gym anyway. So that comes with looks.
Someone don't go to the gym, man.
Answer the question. How many fat 90-year-old 100 people is it? How many fat 70-year-olds in good health that don't go to the doctor? You can't duck that. You can't have too much bristle with fat around your stomach at a certain age. There's no ducking that. I don't fuck how much money you got. I don't fuck how pretty you is. You got to go to the gym and work out. That's man, though. You can't have that much. Your heart can't pump that much weight. There's no ducking that. That's scientifically proven. Am I lying on that? You can't have that much body fat around your stomach and be healthy.
If you're looking for a wife...
I said mix all that. I said for a happy old age, long-term relationship, you gotta work out, go to the gym. You can't have that much body fat around your stomach. Am I lying? Ask your doctor. It's not gonna work anyway. I'm just saying, like, your doctor will tell you. You can't be, so it still come down to looks and the way you still gotta be athletic. You still gotta move around. No matter what. No matter you poor or rich, they got the same regimen they got to do. You can't have that much stomach fat and think you're going to live longer and prosperous. That's not going
to
happen.
The stomach don't got nothing to do with the life. The life, let me tell you something, very, very easy. It's like two things, it's true. The day you born, is the same day God infuses you, the day you pass away. It doesn't matter you work out or you not.
God do not want you to defy the temple. He don't want you to defy the temple. That's the worst sin a man can ever commit. That's worse than killing a baby. There's no sin worse than defying the temple. There's no other sin worse than that. That's the worst sin in the Bible. If you smoke a cigarette, that's worse than killing a newborn baby in God's eyes. There's nothing worse than defiling the temple. There's no other sin worse than that. It's suicide. Those are the two worst sins on the planet. There's nothing worse than that. You know what I'm saying? Let me see if this bus coming. Your wife was an alcoholic?
No, I was a workaholic.
I mean, you gotta be though. You feel me? Unless, like I said, unless your upper half got crazy bread, then you can fall back. But if it ain't a dual thing, then if I'm the one with the most money, then I'm gonna have to be the one out there like I'm working for you, like you my boss. You know what I'm saying? But like, if she got bread and I got bread, she come from bread, then it's a less stress. Like, if she ain't all materialistic at all, she had a dad, good Christmases. Like, them type Jones don't really be on the bread like that. But if she like, you know, in the city, she trying to catch up with the Joneses. She trying to be that fly bitch. She trying to live her teenage years. You know what I mean? She probably wasn't that bitch when she was younger. She trying to be that bitch in her 30s and 40s. Then like, I ain't really got time for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, unless you gonna make moves, get the money, build together. You know what I'm saying? And if they got kids already, they gotta be pushing six figures to do something for their kids. Well, as long, not even a nigga, but like, you already share that mentality. Like, I gotta get this bread. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? But if not, then you just doing some. No, like, that's what I said. Relationships change. You got women got money now. Black women got the most educations in the country. So, like, wifey now is totally different than it was then. Like, your wife gotta be damn near boss. Like, it's in our favor now because the women got money. So we can pick and choose, you know what I mean? More, not saying we need them for their bread, but like, they balling. So my image of a wife and a girl is different 2020. You know what I'm saying? Because the women are different. They leveled up. They on Instagram. They selling their shit. They selling their hair. They balling. So like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to take no iffy Annie joint. Like, no, like, you know what I mean? Because a chick without money right now look in the way. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, for real, for real. It's like, you the eyeball because it's so many women building up their brand, building their businesses, and got money. They online, they selling their stuff. So, like, it's just different right now. So, if you a female still leaning on a nigga, like, you look kind of played out and old. You know what I'm saying? Because that's not what's happening. You know what I'm saying? That's not what's happening right now. They, like her, she made bread because she sell all her products and stuff. Right here online, these all her outfits and stuff, she get money. You know what I'm saying? So it's a different level of wifey. You know what I'm saying? You feel me? They got packages going out. I'm trying to find a joint with her packages. She had like 1,000 packages going out. She make. Oh my wife. They making money. She sell all these clothes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, they be making money out here, man. You know what I mean? That's what I be saying. Like, it's a different level of wifey. Your wifey today might make more money than you.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And you can't be mad at that. You know what I'm saying? It's just the reality of, look, these all packages. Yeah. She gets sending them out. That's what I'm saying. So, wifey, my views of wifey is different. You know what I'm saying? Wifey, you know what I mean? I'm mad at you. You getting half of my pension, my alimony, your child's. You know what I mean? It's a difference. Like, I'm a wife, something like that. Or she a nurse, you know. Like, now, it's about essential jobs. This got essential job, and nurse, you can build something together. But if it ain't on that, then, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not even giving you that title because that title I raised. You know what I'm saying? It's that wifey title is a high level one. You know what I'm saying? You can't just give anybody a title. You know what I'm saying? It's not them, they balling out these jobs. Women, they making a lot of money. The white ones, the black ones. It's really hard to find women that ain't, a woman that ain't got that going on. You know what I'm saying? You feel me?
They making all the money.
Even the Section 8 ones, they got a deal. They live real clean. They got nicer Section 8. Man, them girls look good. Even they winning. So you got a chick with nothing, no fear going on. Like, she just got her hand out. You got to check yourself and check your game and check your mouth. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're kind of going to go. Not saying you ain't going to still wine and dine and provide, you know, the shipping and all that, but like, I'm just saying, you know what I mean? They're wondering right now, time to change. I'm just wild. You want to sit there and behave. You know what I mean? I spend more if you got your own brand, you doing your own shit. That makes me want to treat you and take care of you. You feel what I'm saying? Because you're doing it. You know? Shit. Yeah.
Adrian Bronner says AB can get it too. He's feeling really good, weighing around 130 pounds. Man, little dude. And so he says he wants AB. Let's see if this slick southpaw can actually get somebody in the ring with him. Let's talk about that in this video. All right, welcome back to the channel. Gary Russell Jr., one of my top 10 pound-for-pound fighters in the world, has been a champion longer than all about one person in the sport of boxing. Held the same belt longer than just, I think, everybody except for that little itty-bitty dude down there at 100, Minnelothian at 105 pounds. So he's a long-reigning champion at 126 pounds. And he says that he is willing to fight Adrian Bronner. All knew who Adrian Bronner is. Adrian the problem Bronner, or actually Adrian having a problem getting to win Bronner in the last, I think somebody counted it, like 1,200 days since he's had, it's been a few years since he's got a win. He keeps getting in big fights, but he keeps losing. And that is because he's got a very big name and he puts out good work in those fights. None of the fights are blowouts. He's not running around getting knocked out. It's just he's losing fights because he's fighting bigger guys and he doesn't let his hands go, right? But that's the story of Adrian Bronner. Now, what Gary Russell Jr. said he's willing to do is he's willing to help Adrian Bronner out of that problem and let him fight a guy that is a lot smaller than him. Now, Gary Russell Jr. at 126, I think at his biggest, he's a 130-pounder. Adrian Bronner at his best is a 135-pounder, and who right now probably needs to fight somewhere around 140 pounds. So I don't even know where that fight would be made. You know, whether it would be in a catch weight somewhere around 100. He'd probably have to fight Adrian Bronner at 140 pounds. Now, if the fight were to happen and Gary Russell Jr. was able to pull that off, dude, you would have to shoot that dude way up the pound-for-pound list because he's given up a lot to Adrian Bronner. He's given up length. He's given up size. He's given up power. He's just given up a lot. And if that little dude can beat Adrian Bronner, even at this stage of Adrian Bronner's career, you'd have to sit back and look and say, man, that dude right there, that's a special fighter at 130 pounds. Now, Gary Russell Jr., I think, is one of the most underrated fighters in all of boxing.
River boy. Hey, River boy. You got any fish there today, River boy?
I don't understand how people in ESPN and people on Ring Magazine do not have this guy higher in, number one, even have him on the pound-for-pound list up there, because the dude is small enough where, hey, man, these Monster Inouye can get up there to 126 pounds. Monster Inouye, frame-wise, is bigger than Gary Russell Jr. He's taller, and he's longer than Gary Russell Jr. He's staying, and I think right now, what is he, at 122 pounds right now? He's only 4 pounds away. Come on and move up there to 126 and get handled up by Gary Russell Jr. Easy money style. But Gary Russell Jr.'s got a big problem. And the reason why he can't get... there's a different reason why they're not ranking on that high. Because I think anybody with two eyes can see he deserves it. The reason he ain't getting the fight, one of the reasons is he's not getting the fights. And the reason he's not getting the fights is because a whole bunch of people don't know what his name is. And I don't mean fighter. And I don't mean fans. I'm not saying that boxing fans don't know his name. I'm saying that if people around his weight class act like they don't know his name. Shakur Stevenson acting like I know somebody's told me he said it, but Shakur Stevenson and Andre Ward have zero plans of putting Shakur Stevenson in with Gary Russell Jr. to unify a belt at 126 pounds. Zero plan. Even though Gary Russell Jr. has said himself that he thinks that the only guy at 126 pounds that would have enough nerve to fight him would be Shakur Stevenson, still, I don't see any conversations going on. At least when I hear Andre Ward speak, I hear Bob Arum speak. I never hear James Prince speak. But I didn't hear Gary Russell coming out of their mouth. I know I heard Josh Warrington come out of their mouths. I know that they were pushing. They were like, if I can't get this Josh Warrington fight, I'm going to have to move up to 130 pounds. because, you know, that's the big fight for us is the Josh Warrington fight. I never heard them say anything about fighting Gary Russell Jr., and I don't want to hear the nonsense about the fight not being big because Gary Russell Jr. is out of D.C., and Shakur Stevenson and Shakur Stevenson's out of New Jersey. What's the problem? Those are two East Coast cities. D.C. and New Jersey ain't very far away. That's a couple hours away tops. So you got a fan base. You got a big fan base in D.C. for Gary Russell Jr. People know who Gary Russell Jr. is in D.C. In Newark, New Jersey, people know who Shakur Stevenson is. And so it seems like it would be great for a regional battle. You should be able to find a place in New York. It would sell out in New York. It would sell out in D.C. It would sell, more than likely, it would sell out in Newark, New Jersey. So, because there's plenty of people, in that same demographic in that area who have been following Gary Russell Jr. for a long time. If Robert Easter Jr. can sell out in was it Toledo, Ohio? I can't remember, is he from Toledo? I think he might be from Toledo. If he's not from Toledo, please forgive me. But he was selling out big spots in Toledo. Robert Easter Jr. So you can't tell me Robert Easter Jr. versus Dennis Shafikov can sell out in Toledo, Ohio, but you can't get Shakur Stevenson and Gary Russell Jr. To do big numbers in D.C. Or to do big, and probably the better spot would be in D.C. Because, you know, there's more people in D.C. than there, I think there's more people in D.C. than there is Newark. But yeah, you get the Baltimore area, you get the whole DMV, right? So that's the D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and the parts that border D.C. What's wrong with that fight? Can people say, oh, we need people to put butts in the seat? The combination of those two guys would put butts.
Life has changed. If you need the flexibility of rent-to-own for appliances, electronics, or computers, shop at Aaron's.com.
Butts in the seat. I'll tell you what the problem with that is. Gary Russell Jr. may beat Shakur Stevenson. For the specific reason that Andre Ward, Tim Bradley, and the ESPN crew said that it would be tough for Shakur Stevenson to get fights. That he's a black, slick southpaw. Well, who fits that description to a T? Black, slick southpaw, Gary Russell Jr. Same thing as Guillermo Rigondeaux. These people, they do not want to see one of these guys lose to a fighter like that, which is highly, highly possible, if not probable. At this point in time, I don't believe Shakur Stevenson can beat Gary Russell Jr. at this point in time. That may, now, maybe a little bit down the road, I think he'll be able to. I do believe he's the bigger guy. He's obviously the much younger guy. Highly skilled, definitely. I agree with what Andre Ward says about his assessment. But I think that right now they just believe that he's not ready for a fight with Gary Russell Jr. And it's a shame. It's an absolute shame. Same thing goes for Josh Warrington. Same thing goes for Leo Santa Cruz. Same thing goes for every one of these dudes that have been at that weight class and act like they have no clue who he is. In fact, they act like they don't know who the slick southpaws are at 122 or 126 pounds. So it's a shame that Gary Russell Jr. finds himself in this situation. Now, people say, well, Gary doesn't fight long. He just doesn't fight enough. He only fights one time a year. Well, if he only fights one time a year, that should make him even more easy money, shouldn't it? If he's inactive and he only fights once a year and you got a guy that's fighting 2-3 times a year, he should be able to come in there and knock off the inactive Gary Russell Jr. What difference does it make how many fights Gary Russell Jr. has had? Gary Russell Jr. has got the WBC belt and he's got at least 5 title defenses because he's been there for over 5 years. But somehow people just keep forgetting that he exists. So it's like necessary for him to have to go in order for him to be able to get a fight, a significant fight against these guys. He's going to have to go all the way up to 140 pounds or something like that. And tell me that we have not seen and heard that type of stuff before, where you have a fighter like that just cannot get a fight because these dudes are chicken shit. They don't want to have to deal with the softball stance. They don't want to deal with the fact that the guy might be very, very hard to hit and be able to counter you at the same time. So you know, or Gary Russell Jr., I'm hoping that the Adrian Broner fight happens, man. I wouldn't mind that at all, dude. Now, I don't know if Gary Russell Jr. can pull that fight off. I don't, quite honestly, I don't think he can. But, hey, that right there could be a situation where it could get his name out there more. It would be a big fight because Adrian Broner is included in it. And who knows, man, eventually, you know, before he gets 40, he'll be able to get some of these fights. Now, that's another good reason for him to be inactive. He's not taking nearly the type of punishment because maybe he figures, well, they're going to try to age me out, so I'm going to make sure I'm nice and fresh when one of these idiots try to get up in the ring with me when I wax. Now, I think Gary Russell Jr. is the best fighter below the weight of 135 pounds. So, and that's why I have him up there on my, that high on my pound-for-pound list. I certainly hope he gets the opportunity to prove to other people that he belongs there. And this Adrian Broner fight, hey, that can work. If that's how it goes, and it works out like that, it works out like that. You let me know what you think in the comment section. With that, I'm out. Peace.
Percent of men are actually going through right now. This is literally what their computers flooded with every...
Hey everyone, Chloe here, and welcome back to my channel. And if you are new here, ladies and lurkers, welcome. So today's video is a continuing part of my Feminine School series on the hierarchies and the different archetypes of men. And today's very, very valuable lesson is the dusty, highly irrational, low-value Omega male. Now, the Omega male, not to be confused with the even more dreadful Zeta male, are men who are unwavering in their self-absorbed, self-focused, all-about-me, and self-possessed mindset. Omega men and their high levels of toxicity are not always the easiest to spot, as they are the kind of men who rely on the optics of deception, and they are men who, for the most part, blend into society as the quote-unquote nice guy, the good guy, the decent guy, or the 50-50 guy, and they are men who can openly hide pretty well with halfway decent lives. But once you dig deeper, much deeper, into the life of an Omega male, they are men who more often than not have very, very messed up thinking and very messed up lives and will pull any unsuspecting woman down a toxic circling drain, which is why I am always encouraging women to work on improving their feminine appearance and getting out of the gutter of low self-esteem and low self-worth. Because when you are in the gutter, ladies, and I want you to listen carefully to this, the Omega man will have no problem, absolutely no problem, meeting you there and keeping you there. And as a feminine tip, ladies, Omega men are generally attracted to low maintenance and no maintenance women, who are the main women who are inclined to put their self-care and their self-appearance very dead last. And these narcissistically inclined and attention-seeking men are men who are only motivated by their own self-interest, which leaves very little wiggle room for relationship flexibility, as Omega men are men who completely lack the give and take of reciprocity. They have a very, very strong reputation for being very selfish lovers, and monogamy will be the last thing that an Omega male will feel that he owes a woman. Omega men are the men who do not want and will flat out refuse to pay for women in any shape, form, or fashion. And these are the men who will have no problems with their women working 110 hours a week. And these are the men who are not interested in alleviating any woman's exhaustion or a woman whose tiredness is burning at both ends of the candlestick. Omega men are also men who are typically known for having a supercharged and paranoid mindset, as they are inclined to overuse and to over-rely on being stuck in the melodrama of the past and using tinfoil hat logic, foiled, they are out to get us, government plots, and nonstop conspiracy theories as a smoke and mirrors disability crutch for their lack of drive and ambition and their profound ignorance and their naivete when it comes to their awareness of business, competition, and capitalism. Omega men are men who are more interested, ladies, and who are more emotionally committed to competing with women and seeing themselves as victims rather than seeing themselves as leaders. Ladies, romantic exchanges with these men will be very, very one-sided, debilitating, unfulfilling, and very, very taxing on your energy, your soul, and your spirit. Omega males are typically experienced by women as men who do not want to grow up, as they are men who are also notoriously emotionally stunted and immature. These are men who would much rather read comic books, play video games, or they would rather pursue aimless lifelong hobbies rather than to focus on providing, protecting, or offering stability or security for a wife and family and for a legacy. The Omega male is the male who thrives off of the engagement and the shallow attention of social media likes and social media arguing and debating. And although they are way less misogynistic and much more personable than the Zeta male, the Omega male is still a very low value man who often mistakes his grumpiness, his cynicism, and his overall negative outlook on life for intelligent. Omega men are also notoriously known as closed-minded men, and they are men who delusionally believe that they are smarter than everyone else in the room without any real substance to back up that claim, which is the definition of their wholesale arrogance. In the Omega man's mind, the system is broken, and he is the only one, while the rest of us are dumb, who is smart enough to see it. Ladies, Omega men are notoriously rigid and stubborn men who lack serious, serious growth potential. These are men who will be stuck in the same life position at 25, 37, 43, 57, 74, and if they are unlucky, 91. And very few of these men will ever see the light when it comes to putting a premium on the traditional principles of masculinity. In old age, Omega men are often very broken and embittered, and they are often very sour and stuck in the self-sabotaging ways of their rehashed, recycled, and disempowering played-out thinking, making them very unpleasant, insufferable people to spend time with and to be around for long periods of time. As Omega men get older, they also highly resent their shrinking visibility, because their petty mindsets, for the most part, are deeply annoying, deeply draining, and absolutely zero fun to be around. And men who whine and complain their entire lives away are men who just end up being ignored until they are completely invisible. Overall, Omega men are not a great catch, because at the root of an Omega man is an insecure man whose irrational mindset makes them a horrible and very difficult life partner to stomach. So that's all that I have to say on this for now. I think that it is very important for women to have an expanded vocabulary and a language and a feminine education for the different archetypes of dusty, low-value men. Because low-value men are not one-size-fits-all, but they are certainly overcrowded at the bottom end of the totem pole. So, ladies and lurkers, now it's your turn. Have you ever dealt with an Omega or Zeta or a straight-up low-value man? And what was that toxic experience like? Share your reactions to this video and share your survival stories below. And subscribe to save your life. And stay tuned for more videos to come. And I will catch up with you ladies and you lurkers in the next one.